This is John McEwen with the Americana Music Show again. And today I'm talking to Mr. John Paul Diaz. What do you go by?
I go by Paul.
Okay, Paul.
But, you know, my real name is Juan, but my dad's name is Juan. My grandfather's name is Juan. So I had to call me something different. We all lived in the same house. So.
Oh. Well, I think people will be curious to hear about Tree Sound Studios in Atlanta, which is a place that I recorded. I recorded at your place a couple weeks back and found in Atlanta one of the nicest recording studios that had so many things going on, from interns sitting around learning about the music business to interns sitting around learning about running Pro Tools and the current state-of-the-art recording gear to the professionals that work with you. Just so people are aware of your studio, who are some of the people that have benefited by recording at Tree Sound Studios in the last few years?
There's been quite a few, and it's been a pretty wide range of genres. Some of the bigger names would be like Elton John, Matchbox 20, Outkast. There's just so many great people that we've had a chance to work with.
Why would Matchbox 20 come to a recording studio in Atlanta that a lot of people haven't heard of? Is there a reason? That piano is killer there, and the room is great.
You know, I think what happened was they were working with a producer named Matt Still back during that period of time. And he was Atlanta-based then. He's in California now, I'm pretty sure. But he was Atlanta-based, and he was wanting to build his own studio, but it was going to take a bunch of time, and he was going to need to dump a bunch of money into it. And so in the meantime, he camped out at my place for, I don't know, maybe close to a year. And during that time, Matchbox is one of the projects that he worked on. Edwin McCain might have been another one. I don't know if that was him, but it was during that same time period. So he just needed a room. And as things go, you know, he never ended up building that studio here in Atlanta.
Well, it's because your place is so good. Why bother?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's good for me. Thanks for saying that, for sure. But, you know, it is a...
Well, it is good for you because you produce a lot of projects there yourself. Like who?
Recently we've been working on a great new artist named Donna Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Just really amazing blues, kind of Bonnie Raitt sort of thing. We're working with another local band named Copious Jones, kind of almost a Dave Matthews-y sort of vibe to that one. A group from North Carolina called the Snake Oil Medicine Show that are showing up to do an album with us next month. That'll be maybe our fifth album together.
You told me that you have about, what, two or three albums a year that get on the charts, various record business charts.
Yeah. I think most of the stuff that we've done in the last couple of years has all been like hip hop stuff. We've worked with Lil Wayne a good bit, and with Usher, we've worked with him a good bit in the past year.
You had Usher in that studio?
Yep, Usher. Whitney Houston.
What did Whitney Houston do?
She put out an album.
When you had Whitney Houston there, how long did she spend there recording?
She would usually come in for a day or two at a time, and I would guess, you know, over the period that she was working on that record, we probably saw her for maybe a little more than a month.
And out of that came some recordings that you heard eventually?
She put an album out about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a real, real pleasure working with her. And, you know, all of her people were really professional, and she was just really gracious. She actually ran into one of our label, Tree Leaf Music is our independent label, and
called again? You have an independent label where people that record in your studio can sometimes release their product through, what is it called?
It's called Tree Leaf Music.
Tree Leaf, L-E-A-F?
Yep, L-E-A-F. Tree Leaf Music.
And that's one word, like if you're treeleafmusic.com?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And what happens there?
So she was, one of our artists was in the lobby just kind of working on a part, and Whitney approached her and actually got her to sing to her in the lobby, which was kind of cool for this young up-and-coming artist. She was like, you know, kind of starstruck. But, you know, it's one of the reasons that we enjoy having the small independent label is that we have a great opportunity to act with some bigger artists that happen to be booking our studios. So, you know, we haven't really been able to capitalize on it yet, but we think that pretty soon we'll be able to start landing some guest appearances of bigger artists with our smaller ones and vice versa, you know, maybe getting some features with some bigger artists. But we're really excited about the label just because I mean, you saw the studio and you kind of, I think, got an idea of how much stuff is actually happening on any given day.
How many studios do you have in the facility?
There's 6 rooms in the facility now.
Recording rooms.
6 recording spaces, yep. And one of which is 100% solar powered. That's my partner, James Chambers. His studio is called The Kitchen, and it's kind of our label / private studio. We rent it out sometimes, but usually it's just for our in-house artists and stuff. But his studio is solar, and then there's the other 5. And there's, I guess, probably about a half dozen offices.
What is The Cave?
The Cave is a soundstage, and it also doubles as a studio. It's about a 200-person venue. It's got one open room, or about 18 by 24, and, you know, has a built-in PA and lighting and that kind of stuff. But it's also tied to 3 separate studios in the building. So depending on budget or depending on the technical requirements of a live event, we can tie it into Studio A, which is the room you worked in, of course. We could tie it into Studio 11, which is basically our B room. Both of those are SSL rooms. And then there's a small room in the front called Room 222, and it also ties to that room just because we used to have an old console, an old Neve up in that room that's since moved.
Now, a lot of the things Paul is saying here, for those who don't know what he's talking about, a Neve board is one of the classic electronic recording boards that you plug microphones into to get to whatever recording medium you're going to use. It's N-E-V-E, Neve, and it's the best board. When he's saying things like SSL and all that, some of you may know, but he's referring to various mixing boards. And the thing I found fascinating about Tree Studios, Paul, is that every room is like current state of the art, which helps explain why you might find Elton John or Whitney Houston, which I thought it was amusing. You said, and now we're going for some bigger names, I'm not sure who. Are the Beatles getting back together? So how did you establish that, you know, with all the buzz and talk and the awareness of record industry being New York or Hollywood or Nashville or Austin, what made you go to Atlanta to build this 2-story studio complex in Norcross, Georgia?
I've been living in Atlanta since 1977, so I'm kind of from Atlanta, I suppose, and went to college here. All my friends and family were here, having been around Atlanta for most of my teenage years. And I also did my internships here at some cool studios like Cheshire Sound Studios, which has been gone for quite a while. But Tom Wright, who's one of my mentors, who's also since passed away, but he had Cheshire Sound Studios and Musiplex, which were like a studio complex. When I got to the point where I was going to make a bigger move and borrow the kind of money we did to build a big facility, I did some research. I traveled around the country. I went to New York and LA and Nashville and Seattle and Austin. And I love every one of those towns. And, you know, I think any one of those towns would have been a fitting place to build that kind of facility. But when it came down to it, I didn't really know anybody in those cities.
I'm not sure a lot of those people know each other, except maybe Nashville.
Well, I mean, for me, it was, you know, as a young person taking a huge risk.
What age?
25, 26 when I started doing that. When I started building the studio that you saw, I was maybe my early 30s.
Uh-huh.
And for me, I was kind of, you know, I was afraid of taking that kind of risk. And part of what eased me into that or made me feel confident was the support of the local audio community in Atlanta.
What made you think that a 25-year-old would be able to establish his own American dream and pursue it? What gave you that feeling that you were going to drive towards success and find it?
I was just so determined to work in a recording studio and make records, and I didn't want to pay somebody else to do it.
Do you think your family background might have had something to do with it? Can I mention your father?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Do you think that growing up in the way that you had seen what your father did or knew about it, when he first came to America, how did he do that?
My parents left during the Cuban Revolution. My family, both sides, is from Cuba. So they left in 59, I guess, 58, 59, somewhere in there. And, of course, left everything they owned, you know, minus a suitcase and a handful of cash, and moved to Nassau. So we were actually, my family was living in Nassau when I was born in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, my parents came here. They got a job working for Coca-Cola.
Did your father speak English when he arrived?
He did. He did speak English. My dad had graduated from University of Havana, and I think my mom had gone to University of, I think she went to NYU in New York.
You were the son of a guy that came to America with basically what he was carrying.
Yep.
And the job that he held for 17 years was?
Well, he was the head of finance for Coca-Cola Latin America for a while, and then he became the head of finance for Mexico, because they divided Latin America up into Mexico as a separate division.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's still actually, he's been retired now for 6 or 7 years, and he's 80. And he still flies to Mexico once a month, or sometimes more often, to participate in meetings.
He must be proud of your success on the building of your own business, one he most likely didn't understand.
Yeah, no, he actually has no clue what I do. But yeah, he's very pleased. My parents are both very conservative corporate types, and when I said I wanted to go into music, they pretty much said, no, that's not going to happen.
You ever heard that joke? Mommy, I want to be a drummer when I grow up. Son, you can't do both.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I sort of still feel like I haven't grown up, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah. You have a lot of people that are growing up under you. You've taken on, I don't know if you feel like it's responsibility, but you're influencing scores of people that are between 18 and 22 years old that are searching for a home in the music business or a way to make an imprint. What is that all about?
There's a lot of different answers to that question. I mean, one part of it is that we need interns to make the world go round. We have so many things happening that without the labor that interns provide us, you know, we'd be dead in the water.
What is an intern?
An intern is someone who wants to get a job in the music business, or in our case, who either wants to intern for the record label or become a recording engineer, or maybe they're interested in some of the social media or some of the video work that we're doing. And so they come and they basically are people who put in hours, a set amount of hours a week on a schedule for no pay. And in exchange for that, we train them on a variety of different levels. Part of the training is just a simple etiquette, how to behave in recording sessions or how to behave around famous people, or more importantly, how not to behave.
And how would that be? How would you tell them? What would you tell them in that regard? We have Elton John or Whitney Houston in the studio, and I need you to work that, be a second engineer or whatever. Don't do.
Right. By the time they've gotten to a second engineer position, they already know all these things.
Well, whatever. What would you tell a novice as a instruction with how to deal with a famous person?
Well, one of the things that we do across the board is that everyone's famous and no one's famous is one of the first things that we teach people. You treat everybody with respect equally. If they're famous, you treat them equally with respect. You don't act any different because it's Elton John or Whitney Houston or whoever it is. What's important is to be courteous, not be overly friendly. In other words, people will generally be friendly to you, especially famous people, because it's kind of their job. But they may not want to be chatty. They may just want to be coming to the studio and get busy getting to work and not want to really be talking to a fan. So we try and make sure that people are courteous and, you know, make sure they're responsive to whatever somebody needs, but not too friendly. Don't make the assumption that because they're friendly and they say, hey, and they remember your name, that doesn't necessarily mean they want to have a conversation with you.
One of the things people don't realize is when somebody of note goes into a studio, one reason that they've been able to become known was they put in years of work making things. They've made them badly and they've made them well. And they know that that time when the red light is on is very special, very rare. It's probably the shortest amount of time they spend in any given time period. And they know that it's a serious, they take their job seriously. They may not take themselves seriously. They might be fun, but they are there to work.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a work environment. And we're, you know, we have very strict rules about you should never ask a client if they want to hear your music. You know, we're all musicians. Okay. We all play music. We all want, you know, some of us, almost every one of us, I think, has some sort of musician dream, you know, built in to want to be in the music business in the first place. But the last thing you do is, you know, some intern goes, hey, here's my little brother's demo. I really want you to hear it. And it's like, you can't really, and the client's going to probably be friendly and go, oh, thanks. Yeah, I'll listen to that later or whatever. But it's an uncomfortable situation, you know, and that's not what they're there for.
It's a distraction from the purpose of being.
It is. And they get people coming at them from all sides every day, pretty much, when they're out there on the road and doing events. And our place is sort of like a little sanctuary, you know, where you don't have to worry about people approaching you.
You teach the people the value of silence and how they can learn by being silent and watching.
Absolutely.
I had a major agent that was the president of one of the biggest agencies in Hollywood. I was in his office in 1969, and he was talking, and I was interrupting and asking questions and are contributing, I thought, to the conversation. Hey, I'd been in show business for 3 years at that point, and he was my agent. And, well, Marty, I think that blah, blah. He says, John, you do not learn anything when you are talking. And I went, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it was a big lesson to me, and it was a neat thing. One of the things that I was curious about, oh, darn it, let me think. See, there I was talking, and I want to learn from you. Was Watson an intern?
Watson is an intern still.
See, that speaks well for all the stuff you're talking about. I thought Watson was a regular pro.
Nope, he's a new kid. He's probably been around, I'm going to give him 4 or 5 months maybe.
Now, what I'm referring to, for those listening, I had a 3-day, 4-day session at Paul's studio. And I work very intensely. I knocked out 11 tracks in 3 days. Now, I do that because it's cheaper. I do that because the music can sound more intense or immediate or exciting. If you don't tweak, we're going to work on the snare drum that we did on that song 3 months ago. Because some people have recorded that way. And that works for some people. It doesn't work for me. But Watson was one of the people that was assisting the main engineer, Miguel, and Paul was also the head engineer. But Watson was hearing what people were saying. Somebody would say, I got to get me a music stand. And before I could turn around to tell him, he was out in the studio setting the music stand up for the musician that was seated with headphones and everything. And that's the kind of thing that makes a session run smooth. And it's the only way. And the only way to learn is by a place such as yours being great. Some people go, oh, free labor, interns. Well, you're gracious to do that. And it really helps fuel or give people a little pathway to their dream.
Well, there's a lot that needs to be learned just about how to behave. Like I was saying earlier, before you get to even any technical aspects of recording, that it's, you know, if they take the knowledge that we're giving them and put it to work, you know, they can have a career. You know, they can really, and not just doing music recording. I mean, these kinds of lessons that we try and instill in people, show up on time, work hard, be courteous, treat everybody with respect. That kind of stuff applies in any business.
And sometimes it doesn't seem to have applied in the music business because what gets out there is all the worst news.
Right, right.
But When I was recording Steve Martin on the album I produced on him, The Crow, I had a bunch of people around in the control room, and Steve was kind of messing up on a song because he wasn't playing locked with the guitar player. It's a song that was just the guitar and him playing the banjo. And a couple of people were saying, oh, what are we going to do? He's dragging. Oh, no, now he's rushing. I said, look, this guy takes direction for a living. He wants this to be good. And I went hit the talk back switch, and I said, Steve, you're not locked with the guitar. Listen to him. Let me move your banjo over to the right side of your headphones. I'll put the guitar in the center. Play with him. Lock in with him. He did the next 3-minute pass absolutely perfect. You can't be afraid. These people want to know. I'd tell Elton John that he missed a word because what's going to happen if you don't? 2 months later, when he hears it, he'd say, how did you let me miss that?
Exactly. Exactly right.
And, okay, well.
I actually, to be honest with you, I stopped working most of my bigger sessions about 10 years ago.
Wow.
And just work on sessions that I really want to be involved with, like yours.
Well, I was privileged to have you,
Paul. If the music is something that really speaks to the kind of stuff that I like doing, then I like to be involved in it. But if it's just a big name and I'm not really excited about their music necessarily, then I'm not as big a service to them as a kid who's super stoked about it, you know?
Well, that's good. We're listening to Paul Diaz, who is the owner, operator, chief honcho, and the guy that plugs in the mics the first time and makes sure they're unplugged the last time, for the studio in Atlanta, which is actually in Norcross, Georgia. The studio is called Tree Sound Studios, and it's really a high-class place. And it's the kind of place where people go to realize their musical dream, whether they're established or not. Unheard of people record there to be heard of. Heard of people record there because they know they'll be heard well.
Yeah.
Is there any one particular thing that you'd like to make sure people know about your studio?
Well, I think while we're talking about interns, this could lead into the environmental side of what we try and do. We have a small organic farm about an hour north of the studio. And it's a place where I've lived since 95. And my wife pretty much is the farmer. Sunshine's my wife, and she's the full-time farmer. But part of the deal, if you want to be an intern at Tree Sound Studios, is that you have to put time in every month at the farm. So these kids actually show up and put in like a whole day of farm work, which is usually reasonably hard labor. In all kinds of weather, might be raining, might be super hot, you know, might be cold and windy. And part of the reason that we do that goes back to that whole kind of trying to get the right vibe in the kids, you know, trying to see what they're made out of, so to speak, before we throw them in a session with somebody important.
You have to have a work ethic because it's something you have to, you have to have a worth ec, damn it. You have to have a work ethic that's fair. What's happened to me, Paul? Sorry. Sorry, Ruthie. Here we go. Yes, in the recording business or music business, you have to have a work ethic that's relentless towards getting the job done. It's very well known that when somebody calls and says, how much longer are you going to be in the studio? If the person says, oh, about 15 minutes, that might be 2 to 7 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, and part of that, too, I think, is that the work ethic has to be, you have to be a self-starter. It has to be built in. If I have to follow you around to make sure that you do the stuff I asked you to do, then you're no good to me. And you're certainly never going to make it into a recording session.
I've seen those people.
Yeah, no, we go through a lot of interns. You saw a lot of kids there, and some of them don't last a week, and some of them are there for, you know, a couple of years.
I know. It's like one time, you just bring to mind a kid that I'd taken on the road. Because over the years, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, I let people work for the road crew or be setting up the sound, or sometimes the sound company would have new people. One of them was Billy Bob Thornton, who was a roadie for about 15 different shows. And he speaks very proudly of working with the sound company with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He's a cool guy. But there was just one kid. I was in Asheville, North Carolina, and everything was kind of ready to go. We're 45 minutes before the show, and I said, go out and count the audience for me. And he said, well, why do I have to do that? I said, because, well, I asked you to. Well, why do you have to know that? I said, because I need to know how many people are here. Well, how do you expect me to do that? I said, you count them. Well, it's going to take a long time. I said, yeah, that's why I can't do it.
Right.
And all of I'm having this conversation when I'm supposed to be tuning, and the guy is like, well, you know, go do the job. Don't. I had to count them. We were working on a very low guarantee with a high percentage based upon the number of people that were being at the show.
Sure. And
the promoter was telling me there was at least 1,000 people fewer than it appeared to be. I said, look, I'll make it easy for you. You count one row and then count the number of rows. Can you multiply?
Right.
You know, and that was the last time the kid worked with us.
Yeah.
You just don't do that.
No, and really the great thing about the farm is that it's like, I mean, usually me and Sunshine will be out there working with the kids. You know, we're not like sitting inside drinking iced tea or something while they're out there slaving, you know. We're out there busting our asses too. But you can really see when you're in that environment who shows up and who works hard and who doesn't.
Well, how long do you continue this dream, Paul, of having the coolest studio in Atlanta?
Well, we just had our 20th anniversary.
Wow.
Back in October. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll have at least another 20 ahead of us.
Well, that's good to hear. I bet there's a lot of people coming up that can't wait to get to the famous Tree Sound Studios in Atlanta. How do they find it on the internet?
Treesoundstudios.com.
Pretty complicated.
Yep, yep. Or if you Google us, we'll probably come up in 1,000 places. You know, another thing that we do as Tree Sound Studios that we try and do to promote the environmental movement is we have a sound company that's called Tree Power and Sound. And what we do is small.
Will you plug into a tree? What do you do?
We have solar panels, we have wind generators, and we have a biodiesel generator. And we haul those to anything from Bonnaroo to a high school that we're doing.
I'm sorry, my computer just told me what time it was.
Oh,
say that anything from.
I said anything from Bonnaroo to Woodstock High School, which is a local Georgia high school that we're doing an event at next weekend.
So you did one of the stages at Bonnaroo?
We do the Planet Roo stage, which is the small environmental like area in Bonnaroo, Planet Roo.
And for those that don't know, Bonnaroo is kind of the miniature Woodstock that takes place between Chattanooga and Nashville every year. And has about, 100,000 people come to it?
I think they had about 120 last year.
Yeah, I was one of them. Well, I was playing with the Dirt Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. We played Bonnaroo. And I can't remember the stage. It has how many stages? 7?
At least. You know, I can't remember them all, to be honest with you, because I never leave my stage when I'm there.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds like you're doing it all, everything that you wanted to do, that you set out to do. And I think that's good to see somebody fulfilling their dream. And it comes about from hard work in pursuing that.
Yep. And I think part of it too is just having belief that what you're doing is the right thing to do.
Well, a lot of people believe that you've done the right thing. That's why they come there to record. Paul, this is Paul Diaz I'm talking to, running Tree Sound Studios in Georgia. And thanks for the time.
Thank you so much, John, for the interview. And The Crow is my favorite new banjo record.
Well, thank you. I won a Grammy for producing that. That gets me a free ticket somewhere, I guess.
I would have liked it even without the Grammy.
Yeah. Me too, but it's nice to get the little prize and get you a ticket to the party.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, thank you, Paul. I look forward to seeing you at the studio or anywhere.
All right, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.